Good morning and welcome to the May panel of the Nebraska Court of Appeals. I am Mike Pearl from Omaha and I'm pleased to be joined today on my left by Judge Rico Bishop from Lincoln. Judge John Erman was scheduled to be here with us today, but he is away today for health reasons. So other judges from our court will be participating on the four cases this morning on briefs. And when I announce each case, I will tell you the name of the other judge who will be participating on the briefs. We are going to take the four cases this morning in order. Shelley, are we recording?
We are.
Okay, so we are recording the audio of these, and they will be archived and put on the Nebraska Supreme Court's website, so they will be available to listen to later at your discretion. With that, I believe we will go ahead and get started. Our first case is In Re Interest of Darius A, and Judge Francie Newman will be participating on briefs. And I would add real quickly, if you have not signed in the sign-in sheet this morning, will you please do so before you leave today? This is In Re Interest of Darius A. Counsel, you proceed.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court, my name is Lisa Gonzalez, and I'm here on behalf of the appellant in this case, the mother of Darius, Stephanie Huber. I'm here today asking the Court to reverse the decision of the juvenile court and remand the order to dismiss the petition due to the state of Nebraska failing to meet their burden of proof.
And the burden of proof in this case was by preponderance of the evidence.
Correct. Specifically regarding my client, the juvenile court found that Darius is a child who falls under Nebraska Revised Statute, Section 247.3a. Through the fault of my client, Ms. Huber, due to her failure to provide necessary educational and medical care to Darius. I'm going to start by addressing the allegations of the medical neglect, because I think the medical neglect plays a significant part in the educational portion of the trial. And I know the cross-appellant is going to address on the educational neglect. Darius's ongoing medical issues have caused multiple absences from school, and my client would not contest that issue. I think it's important to note at the start that Darius is born with a number of medical issues that he continues to have to this day. Specifically, he was born with PBL, which is a traumatic brain injury that affects his IQ and his ability to complete certain tasks. He was born with cerebral palsy. He was born with severe seizure disorder, central apnea, and was later on diagnosed with a form of autism. Ms. Huber and Darius's father, Mr. Antonides, have provided 24/7 care for Darius since he was born and continue to provide that care for him today as he remains in the home this time. Throughout Darius's lifetime, he's been on numerous medications, and his medications have changed quite frequently. At times, depending on the side effects or toxicity levels of the medication in Darius' system. During the beginning of 2014 school year, there were a couple complicating factors for Darius when he was starting that school year. He was beginning his first year at Dawes Middle School, coming from a school that he had been at for 5 years previously, and into a new school that had to deal with medical issues. In addition to that, he was being taken off of a medicine called Lamictal that he had been on since 2005 and was put on a new medicine called Bonfi.
It appeared to me that the Dawes staff exerted some efforts to meet with your client and to understand the situation and was trying to accommodate.
Through testimony, it was determined that there was kind of an all-staff meeting beforehand to let the staff know of Darius's medical needs. However, they did not do anything as far as doing an updated IEP or an IHP for him what they did was they used the IEP from the previous year, and through testimony it was determined that the IEP from the previous year was not working for him, and he was not able to meet those goals. However, they just carried that over and didn't put any new goals in place for the beginning of the year. That was one of my client's main concerns, was that that IEP and the IHP were not being addressed, and she had concerns that the staff was not going to be able to take care of areas for those reasons. In the summer of 2014, Darius's pediatric neurologist, who's Dr. Walcott, who he has seen for many years, decided to switch that medication due to the level of toxicity in Darius's system from the Lamictal. Almost immediately, there were concerns that my client saw that she voiced to Dr. Walcott, Dr. Walcott's nurse. She eventually voiced the same concerns to the school and the side effects of that medicine was having on Darius. Those side effects eventually led to him being able to not communicate. He became nonverbal at one point. He was no longer able to feed himself. He was no longer able to use the restroom. Basically, everything that he had worked on for the last 13 years had gone backwards at that point.
From my reading of the record, it appeared that much of that was attributed to by your clients not following the prescriptions that Dr. Walcott had given her. Taking off the one medication and starting a new one.
In my mind, we can see that there were medication changes throughout Darius's life, and her testimony and her belief was that she followed those changes to the best of her ability. Through the testimony of Dr. Walcott, it was determined that he's not in his Lincoln office very often, and his conversations with my client actually took place over his cell phone many of the times when he was traveling between offices. My client's testimony is that she believed that the medication changes were not always documented due to Dr. Walcott not always being in the office, and Dr. Walcott conceded at one point that that is a possibility that that could happen.
Is there anything in the record to indicate that there have been issues trying to regulate medication for this child in the past?
There had, the Lamictal that he had been on was reaching levels of toxicity, and that's why they decided to take him off.
Was it affecting him to the point where he had to miss school?
Previously he was missing more than 20 days of school as well. The school was working with the parents.
Was that the average number of days he missed school in the course of his school years?
I believe it was more, but I don't know for sure.
That was in the record.
Right.
What's the best evidence in the record is that your client was working diligently with medical staff to make sure that the regulating of the, or taking meeting off the on-demand was the correct way to do that?
I think the best evidence would be my client's testimony and the acknowledgement of Dr. Walcott and his nurse that my client would call him frequently with questions about the medication, how it was affecting him, wondering if dosages should be taken down. I also think that it speaks volumes in the record that neither Dr. Walcott nor his nurse felt the need to ever contact CPS regarding this issue. They didn't feel that it placed Darius in a situation that's dangerous that CPS would need to be contacted. I also think at the end of Dr. Walcott's testimony, when he was asked what medication Darius was on at that time, he said he would have to defer to my mother because she was, quote, his right arm for knowing the dosages and things like that. So I think without those two as mandatory reporters, feeling that there was a need to contact CPS and that Darius was being placed in danger, I think says volumes, as well as her contacting people on a regular basis, whether it be the school nurse, she contacted school administrators at one point, she frequently contacted the doctor's office with their concerns.
Was the excessive number of absences in this particular school year attributable to this whole changing of meaning off of on being the problems that the child was having?
I think it contributed significantly. She's not contesting the fact that he was not in school for almost the entire month of October due to that change in medication and side effect it was having on him. He did continue to miss after that. And I think in the ruling from the court even notes that Darius has medical conditions that would lead to him missing school frequently because of those issues. There was also testimony that the school would choose to send Darius home if he was having that seizure activity because he was not able to be maintained at school.
But that was documented differently than him not showing up at school. It wasn't school.
Well, there were some issues surrounding that and some meetings as to how that should be documented. Even between the school's witnesses, they differed on how the person that did the attendance testified differently as to what the school nurse said and what the principal said as far as how that should be documented. So there was some controversy over how that was documented and if it should be a medical document or a parent approved. But many times it was the school that was deciding with the parents to send Darius home because he was unable to be maintained after having that seizure activity.
I take it you were unable to find any case law that would be on point with regard to having a situation like this where regulating medication might impact education in the way that it did. I don't recall seeing any of the other parties speaking about that.
Correct.
Did you live out of state?
I did not. I lived in Nebraska and I was not.
It is kind of an unusual circumstance when you have problematic medication issues that might impact school.
Right.
So a lot of this came down to credibility of witnesses and factual findings by the lower court.
It did, and I think it speaks volumes that, you know, at the end of Dr. Walcott's testimony, he said that he trusts Ms. Heber to know what medication Darius is on and that she's able to report his dosages every time that he spoke to her. I'd also point out that the trial court also found that Ms. Heber kept Darius home, that her keeping him home is understandable because she was concerned about his safety at the school. And I would just reserve the last few seconds for rebuttal.
Oh, ma'am. Thank you. How are we going to divide between 10 minutes here?
Well, Your Honor, my name is Susan Kirchman, and I represent the cross appellee. Ms. Bonet and I have an agreement that we would. Did you say last 9 minutes or last 9 minutes?
No. She has 9 seconds left. You're about, no, you have 10 minutes. I just want to know how you're going to
divide. We have an agreement that we would each take 5 minutes. And I would also ask the court to allow me to reserve 1 minute for rebuttal on my cross appeal.
Okay.
Thank you. May it please the court. My name is Susan Gershon. I know. I have my script though, it's hard to go off of it. I represent the appellee and the cross appellate, Gregory A., the father of Darius A. And we are here today. We concur with Ms. Bonet's argument regarding the medical neglect issue. The focus of my argument, if the court will allow, would be to address the educational neglect that the state has alleged to be the juvenile court found. Our position is that the juvenile court applied an improper standard in finding that Mr. A neglected his child's educational needs by framing the issue as whether the absences were permitted by the school and not whether they were justified in the eyes of my parents. Under the Nebraska statutes, compulsory education law requires children to attend school every day unless excused by the school or when illness makes attendance impossible or impracticable. That disjunctive or that leads one to the conclusion that the parents do still retain a right to determine whether attending school that day is practicable for their child. In a case where you have a child with such severe medical needs with frequent recurring seizures, inability to care for himself, the determination of whether the child is safe and well enough and healthy enough to attend school should be and remain the parent's determination and not the determination of the school authorities.
Would your argument here be stronger if the medication regimen was being followed by the parents and yet they were still having the problems as opposed to here where it just didn't seem like the mother was following on the doctor's orders on how to handle the medication?
Yes and no. And then on the one hand, it was Ms. H that was taking the responsibility for the child's medication, and Mr. A was not involved nearly as much with the medication issues as the mother was. But additionally, it isn't just the medication issue. This child has frequent and recurring seizures. That he can't be in school when he has a seizure. A lot of times he can't even attend school after the seizure. I think the medication issue does muck up the argument a little bit, but when the parents were pulling him from school because of room 140, and not so much that he was having ongoing problems with medication. It was the room 140.
That was Ms. Asia's testimony, that she didn't like the child being sent to 140, that she was concerned that the school wasn't properly caring for him, that she thought he was being put in isolation in room 140.
What evidence is there in the record to support that?
Other than Ms. Asia's testimony?
I'm not aware of any, because a lot of the school personnel indicated otherwise.
That is correct. The school personnel said he is being watched.
And there was no doctor that had indicated they felt he was in the child's best interest to be home for an extended period of time, was it?
That is correct. There was no medical testimony that the child did not need to attend school or was unable to attend school, but then that begs the question of, when does the child need to be medically excused? As a parent, you have to make a lot of those decisions on your own. And the school even tells you, if it's running a fever, don't bring them to school because we assume that he's contagious and all of that. The school isn't going to have broad guidelines for a child with such special needs that it doesn't touch most of the families that are affected by the compulsory education laws.
You made an interesting argument about being homebound. Is there anything in the record that indicates a request for a visiting teacher at home?
No, there's not. And in fact, that's something that came to mind when I was writing Brave and Not Longer Trying Case. So I will admit that was added in a little bit later on, but I think it kind of speaks to the issue of, we have a child that isn't like your average child that can in fact be in school every day. Who gets to make that decision? I'd like to reserve the rest of my time.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Good morning, Ms. Monet.
Good morning. May it please the court. My name is Ashley Monet, and I represent the appellee on this case, and I would ask that this court uphold the lower court's decision and find that the state proved by the preponderance of the evidence, the allegations, and the amended petition. As it relates to the educational neglect, I would concede that there is a child that will miss more school than the average child. He does have high medical needs that may cause him to be absent from school. But parents missed 60 days of school at the time of the trial, meant 388 periods of unexcused absences. That is excessive, even with medical needs. The school is able to determine whether an absence is excused or unexcused. The school officials testified that an excused absence would be a medically documented absence versus an unexcused, which would be a truancy, illness, or parent approved.
If the parent approved is unexcused,
I'm sorry, it should have been parent acknowledged. The parent acknowledged is unexcused. The parent acknowledged can be anything from a funeral to any reason that the parents of the child were going to be there, indicating that the child is not going to be present, but the school did not excuse that absence.
So if a parent says, my child is sick and I'm keeping him home, that is not excused?
No, that would either be like an illness or parent acknowledged.
So anytime a child is sick, your position is that you have to have a doctor write a note?
The school is the one who makes the decision on finding whether or not it's medically documented versus illness or parent acknowledged. It could be more than against the doctor's note, it could be less, but it's ultimately the school's decision or finding as to whether.
How do they know? They don't see the child. How can they make that determination?
I think they do rely on documentation from a doctor's office.
So if the child has the flu, the parent wants to keep the child home. That's unexcused unless there's a doctor's note. A parent can't make that call.
I believe so. And I don't think that
you would find that on the law reasonable?
No, because I don't think that truancy, the gift refers to county attorney's office in 20 days. The child is even sick 20 days during the course of a year. I think there's obviously something more concerning going on and that they should be going to the doctor, ensuring that the child is getting the medical care that they need.
Well, this child is always going to the doctor.
Yes. Well, I would actually disagree with that. This child is supposed to be going to the doctor more often than he should be.
But he's always under a doctor's care because of all the multitude of problems that he has to deal with.
He didn't have a primary care physician at the time of the trial. He did have a neurologist, but he's supposed to be seeing a doctor, I think, more often than he was seeing Dr. Wolcott.
Primary care physician abandoned him because he wasn't somebody in the office.
Well, yeah, inappropriate.
That has nothing, that's not a parental decision.
No, but I think that the parents can make sure that the child has appropriate medical care. And there is Dr. Wolcott testified he wouldn't be able to do the type of medical care that a primary care physician would be.
Is there any evidence that the parents sought other physicians to try to take over that primary care but would return now?
I don't know. But looking at the absences, I would say that the majority of the absences, there was a time period October 2014, the parents did not attend school. There's testimony by the appellant that she compelled him because she was upset with the school, that she felt that he was being punished for pre-seizure activity. In addition, there was also a Facebook post that she had made on Facebook account stating essentially the same thing, that she was withholding him because of her issues with the school. That is obviously not an excuse to absence. In addition, there was testimony provided that she withheld Derek from school because of issues with transportation. The appellant does not have a driver's license, was not the individual who triggered if he missed the school bus. Rather, it was a proper call from the individual who would transport Derek to doctor's appointments into the school, but because she didn't have a vehicle, she did not send him to school for the entire month of October 2014.
So these are parents who have been raising the child with a lot of challenges in that process for all these years and only get to middle school. Is there any evidence in the record to suggest that they have failed in any way in the past in regulating medication and getting their child to school?
Carrie Schoener, the nurse with Dr. Wolkoff's office, testified that Ms. Nubia Cohen had initially not provided various medication as prescribed. She said that had been an ongoing issue in the past. And so I think that these parents had that issue previously.
As it relates to
Did she supplement that with any indication how that had a negative impact on the child?
Carrie Schoener did not, but Dr. Wolcott stated that there was issues specifically with Onzi not being given as prescribed when there were issues with variances. Specifically the seizures. There was a seizure early in September of 2014 from Darius Justine in the emergency room. At the time, the appellant indicated she was getting 5 milligrams of Onzi twice a day rather than 20 milligrams and 10 milligrams. And Dr. Wolcott stated that this is likely a withdrawal seizure because of the way she was not getting the medication as prescribed. In addition, Dr. Wolcott said taking Darius off the medication quickly could likely result in seizures, if not death. He did state that these actions by the appellant were dangerous. In addition, I would just say that the school did not have to do reasonable services in order to provide to the family. This court has found in Ray Lillicup that there's a difference between the compulsory education laws and the juvenile code. There is obviously a new statute, the Proxy Revised Statute 79209, that did find that the school does have to do something in addition, has to do a collaborative plan, has to meet with the parents, essentially trying to address some of these school issues, and the school did that. And I would say that the failure for Darius to attend school consistently did negatively harm him, even though he was a high-income child. I realize I'm out of time, so.
Thank you. Thank you very much. How far did we take her over?
Took her over about 45 seconds.
Let's add that to Ms. Gonzalez's time.
Okay.
Give her 9 seconds.
Six now.
If you want.
Thank you, Your Honor. What I was just going to leave the court with was, again, the trial court's own ruling that Ms. Hebert keeping Darius home for the month of October, and I think at any of that matter, was her looking out for his best interest and his safety. She did not feel that he was safe at school, and she was doing what she thought she needed to do in order to keep him safe. I don't think that she ever acted to intentionally keep him home.
During the month of October, did she make any effort to contact the school?
She did. She contacted him. There was testimony from Mary Ells, who's a school administrator. She contacted Mary Ells and stated that she wanted a meeting with the school to try to figure out the IEP and the IEP and how they were going to address Darius and his neighbors. That meeting did eventually happen, I think, about 2 weeks in. And after that, all that stuff was worked out. Darius had to work back to school and remain in school other than the times that he was there since your activity after that.
Are you aware if there's anything in the record indicating a search for another primary position after the one abandonment?
If I recall, I believe Ms. Hebert testified that they had been looking, and her testimony was not a lot of people want to take on Darius as a teacher because he is a big liability to have.
Thank you. I would note in rebuttal that Darius was a fragile child. He's not expected to survive in the same level of his early childhood. And the fact that he's made it all the way to middle school suggests that the parents have been more than appropriate in provisioning medical care for the child. As far as the educational issues concerned, there's no evidence to suggest that Ms. Hebert was manipulating the medication to interfere with the school due to tend to be present at school. In Ray Letitia S.
I understand your point, but when a parent does that, doesn't dose out the medication according to the prescription. That can have a lot of different ramifications. That's really kind of the bottom line. And if you're not following the prescription, there's going to be unintended results sometimes, right?
There are. And, you know, sometimes the parent may choose to provide less medication for a child because they know how the child responds to it. There's myriad reasons to not follow prescriptions. Maybe the court wouldn't be terribly impressed with that, but the reality is that we all have this a long time.
Thank you. All the cases submitted, we have an advisor, and I'm here to thank you.